Welcome back to another episode of City Hall Pass. I'm Kapel Lungani, counsel to the mayor of New York City. We created this forum, the first of its kind in New York City, to give you, the public, a unique window into the highest levels of our city government. We interview New York City's finest public servants and get them to open up in a way that is both deeply personal and insightful. And on its best days, we hope that our podcast is equal parts educational and inspiring. And now I want to introduce my two co-hosts today, two brilliant women who inspire me every day, Bess Chu and Kate Coughlin.
Thanks, Kapel. Happy to be here. This is Bess Chu. I'm currently Chief of Staff to the Office of the Counsel to the Mayor.
Hi, I'm Kate Coughlin, and I currently serve as Deputy Counsel for the Office of the Counsel to the Mayor.
I want to introduce our guest today, the Commissioner of the New York City Department of Health and Mental Hygiene, Dr. Dave Choksi. As New York City's Health Commissioner, Dr. Choksi leads the largest health department in the country and oversees the city's public health response to the ongoing COVID-19 pandemic. Dr. Choksi's prior work experience spans the public, private, and nonprofit sectors, including positions with the New York City and State Departments of Health and the Louisiana Department of Health before and after Hurricane Katrina. Dr. Choksi even served on the FEMA delegation to New York City after Hurricane Sandy in 2012. He also served as a White House fellow, where he became the principal health advisor to the Secretary of Veterans Affairs during President Obama's administration. Before becoming New York City's top doc, Dr. Choksi served as Chief Population Health Officer at New York City Health and Hospitals, where he built and grew an award-winning team dedicated to health system improvement. Amazingly, he also makes time to see patients as a primary care physician at Bellevue Hospital since 2014. In this episode, Dr. Choksi shared personal memories of his family and their inspiring journey to America, spoke about the health department's commitment to justice and equity, shared some insights about the recent COVID-19 variants, and discussed the city's incredible vaccine rollout. We hope you enjoyed as much as we did. I now want to welcome the Commissioner of the Department of Health and Mental Hygiene, Dave Choksi, to City Hall Pass. Dave, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me, Kapil.
Dave, when you were appointed as Health Commissioner, people all across the country had wonderful things to say about you. And I wanted to quote from Dr. Murthy in particular, because I thought his quote really summarized the man who you are. Dr. Murthy said, and I quote, "For the last 15 years, I've seen Dr. Choksi touch the lives of patients and communities in profound ways as a physician and public health leader. He is of a rare breed of leaders who combine brilliance and strong judgment with humility and compassion. These qualities and his unfailing moral compass will serve New York City well as it faces the COVID-19 pandemic and longstanding public health challenges. In Dr. Choksi, New York has found a leader worthy of its trust and support." And I can say, having worked with Dave very closely over the last few months, Dr. Murthy was spot on. And I was surprised to learn that you were actually the first person in your family to go into medicine. Can you talk about what drew you to medicine?
Sure. And first, I have to just say that's such a gracious and kind assessment, both from you and from Dr. Murthy. And I hope to live up to it, both in this job and in my career. And yes, as the first doctor in my family, I didn't have role models for what it actually meant to practice medicine. But I had so many experiences, whether it was getting hospitalized as a child with an asthma attack myself, to my father's decades-long struggle with diabetes, where I saw how health was connected to opportunity. And that link was really what drew me to health. And I use that word deliberately rather than medicine, because medicine is only one part of health. And I think about one other formative experience that I had early in my career, which was actually at the turn of the century, when in the United States and other parts of the world, we had access to antiretrovirals. These are HIV medicine and good medicines. I remember them being described as having a Lazarus effect, bringing people back from the depths of illness. But in so many other parts of the world, particularly sub-Saharan Africa, parts of Asia, at the same time, the places that had the most people suffering from HIV AIDS did not actually have access to those medicines. And so for me, it was another lesson that science, technology, innovation, they're not enough. When it comes to actually improving the health of people, you also need a commitment to justice and a commitment to ensuring that the people who most need help are able to access it.
I mean, Dave, it's fascinating that you describe it as a commitment to justice. That's normally something you hear from lawyers. And to use it in the context of medicine is both creative and I think fitting, especially where we are today in the midst of COVID. Is that sense of justice that you have, does that come from your family?
Yes. I mean, in so many ways, I owe everything to my family's story, like many of us. But I would say particularly the boldness of spirit that I've derived inspiration from my grandparents who moved from villages in rural Gujarat to Mumbai, the New York City of India, to my own parents who then took up and moved to a new country. You know, as with so many immigrants, not that many resources, but a sense of adventure and a sense of themselves. And so that's something that I've always looked back on to have courage myself. But I would also say, particularly in medicine, there are bountiful examples of the courage of people who show resilience in the face of illness. We as doctors in particular get to bear witness to the best and the worst of humans and humanity. But the best side of that is in seeing how people can dig deep within themselves, either for taking care of their own health or for caring for someone else. Almost every day, there's an example of a patient or a family whom I can look to and say, that's real courage. My job is to feel that deep sense of responsibility that you've mentioned and have those patients and those families in mind to have the fuel to actually deliver on that responsibility.
So in your role as health commissioner, obviously you're working with our other top public health experts like Dr. Katz, Dr. Verma, Dr. Long. When determining policies, how do you balance the public health with how do we get people back to work? Because they have to work.
Yeah, well, first, I'm really grateful to be part of such an amazing health leadership team. It's a group that has really collaborated well together, that brings some diverse perspectives to very challenging problems, but we have so many shared values with respect to how we approach those problems. And this is a very good example of it. And I think so much flows from what we consider our jobs to be. And I think one of the shared values is to think about our jobs as promoting health, not just fighting the pandemic, not just beating back the virus, but really taking a more expansive view of what health encompasses. It's part of the reason that all of us felt so strongly about making schools as safe as possible to be able to bring children back, knowing how important education is to kids' health. And similarly, thinking about it not as this false dichotomy between the economy and public health, but actually saying part of our goal in bringing that restaurant worker back to being able to earn an income as safely as possible, yes, but also recognizing that being able to eat healthy food depends on earning that income. So it's about teasing apart all of those interconnections under this rubric of health, which again connects to the opportunity that everyone is seeking in their lives.
The four of you collaborate to come up with resolutions to what are the most complex public health problems we're facing, because there is no city like New York City in this country. We're really a country within another country. And the decisions that you make have ramifications throughout the country and throughout the world. And say, for example, the schools reopening. We were the first ones to do it. And in large part, because of the extraordinary health expertise that we had and the mayor's confidence in your expertise. So Dave, can you talk a little bit about how you get a problem, you unpack it, but then really check in with the various senior people on your team, because each one of them provides different qualities and different experiences that I think ultimately help you decide what we're going to do and what your final recommendation to the mayor will be.
The starting point is humility, and humility comes very naturally, but I would say particularly during this pandemic. anyone who has really rolled their sleeves up and tried to take on this virus has experienced that it is a formidable foe. You know, there are so many things over the last few months that have been humbling with respect to what we need to do to actually save lives and prevent suffering. But from that starting point, each of us, I think, is able to then suspend any preconceived notions. And I think that is so important for the process of problem solving, as you put it. Let us take the problem, approach it from all of the different facets, put those considerations out on the table so that we can have a genuine 360-degree view of what could and should be done. The other thing that humility leads one to is to say, yes, even though we are the greatest city in the world, there are other good thinkers around the country, around the world. Let us learn from them. Let us understand how others are trying to take on the same problem and actually stand upon their shoulders. And that's a reflex that, you know, that I certainly have and that other leaders on the team have as well. And the final thing that I'll say is that I feel very fortunate because I have a secret weapon, and that's the finest health department in the entire world. People who have literally been training and working their entire lives, preparing for a global pandemic like the one that we're facing. And so I've been very fortunate to be able to rely upon that expertise and to learn from people on my own staff.
We'll be right back with more from our conversation with New York City Health Commissioner Dr. Dave Choksi. But I want to take a second to share with our listeners that the city's vaccine reservation site is now easier to use. New Yorkers can visit nyc.gov/vax4nyc. That's nyc.gov/vax4nyc to make appointments whenever we have the supply. It's available in 10 languages and includes city sites plus other providers. I also want to remind our listeners to get tested for COVID-19. And remember, tests are free and confidential. Text COVID-TEST to 85548 or visit nyc.gov/COVID-TEST to find a convenient site near you. Or you can call the new COVID-19 hotline. Call for free advice from medical staff, quarantine guidance, emergency food, hotel rooms, mental health counseling, travel guidance, and much more. Call 212-COVID-19 from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. 7 days a week. Back to you, Capel.
Dave, you actually took this job in the middle of the COVID pandemic. And I'm sure there were people outside of the city who questioned your sanity in doing so. Can you talk a little bit about why you decided to take on this extraordinary challenge? Because as I'll just take people back, there was still a great deal of uncertainty about this virus and what we were going to do. But yet you jumped in with both feet and you took on this challenge. Why?
This past Sunday, I was doing a shift at one of our vaccine hubs. And I love doing this because I get to talk not just to the patients, but also to my staff who are working there. And so I asked one of them, why did you choose to do this on a Sunday? You could be home with your family. You know, you could be relaxing after a long week. And she said, well, Commissioner, when the fire bell rings, you drop your sandwich and you get going, even if you're hungry. And I think that just summarizes it all. And so when the mayor called me and asked me to serve, yes, I felt some trepidation because of how significant of a responsibility it was. But there was certainly no question in my mind that it was the right thing to do, to take on the job and to rise to the occasion. And I've worked every single day since then to try to do that.
You know, you've spoken quite a bit about the commitment to justice and public health really on this broader scale and the focus on health equity. This has come up obviously pre-COVID. I think there have been a lot of disparities noted in health, particularly for those who are of low income, for Black and Brown communities. But this has also been something that's come up a lot during COVID. What is the city doing to ensure equitable treatment and response to COVID for these communities?
I'll start by saying that anyone who doesn't see health equity as fundamental to our response, particularly during the COVID-19 pandemic, simply hasn't been paying enough attention. We should be and remain each day shocked by how much suffering has been disproportionately borne by the groups that you've mentioned, particularly low-income people and communities of color. At the same time that we are shocked, we should not be surprised. And that's because this is unfortunately just the extension of the historical patterns of injustice that have been laid down over decades and centuries in our country and in our city. It's the intersection of a devastating virus with those historical patterns of injustice. And so what it requires of us going forward, and I'm grateful to our mayor and this administration's commitment to this vision, is both addressing it in the very near term with respect to how we think about our responsibility in the pandemic response, and also doing everything that we can to reverse those historical patterns of injustice. But it becomes very real when you think about what we've had to do during COVID-19, whether it's ensuring access to testing in the most underserved communities, whether it is looking at our data, cases and hospitalizations and deaths by zip code, and seeing not just a map, but a roadmap to what needs to change, and particularly doing that with our vaccination effort, because it gives us a chance to redress some of those inequities that we have seen both over the last year as well as over the last decades. And so we are embedding and centering equity and thinking about what our responsibilities are and how we should hold ourselves accountable to succeeding in our vaccination campaign.
Can you talk a little bit about what the city is doing in terms of the vaccination campaign?
Absolutely. We have thought deeply about vaccine equity, but thinking is not enough. We have now translated it into action. And really, you know, there are sort of three pillars of how we've been thinking about it: allocation, access, and outreach. With respect to allocation, just put very simply and concretely, we have to make sure that the vaccine is going to the people and the communities that have suffered the most. So for example, we're making sure, and we were an early national leader in this, we're making sure that our community-based clinics, often known as federally qualified health centers, are getting a sufficient allotment of vaccine each week, because they are the ones that have the trusted relationships with their patients in communities to be able to actually get people vaccinated. With respect to access, you know, the city has had a laser focus on ensuring that our own vaccine sites are in the hardest hit neighborhoods. And that complements the existing healthcare infrastructure in a way that also helps us address equity. And then the final piece, maybe the most important one, which is outreach. This is about having the conversations with not just people, but institutions and leaders in the communities that we aim to serve, whether it's faith leaders or people who are running community-based organizations, empowering them with science-based information, bringing the vaccine to them as well, and also infusing our approach again with humility to say, in order to take a step forward with vaccine equity, we might actually need to take a step back. Recede into the background, empower others, because they are the ones who are the trusted messengers in their communities. And so that's how we've tried to approach the problem.
One of the things that I think we've seen a lot in the news, but that I myself have also experienced, is especially at the beginning, in order to get vaccinated, you have to make an appointment. I remember sitting there helping my parents make their appointments because they're over 65, refreshing all the websites. Can you tell us a little bit more about how the city is increasing, you know, people's access to get appointments and what they can do instead of maybe sitting there refreshing the website?
Yes. You know, let me say, because of the limited supply of the vaccine that we have had, we do recognize that it has been more challenging than we would like for people to access appointments. But our goal with this and with everything is to make it so that today is better than yesterday and tomorrow will be better than today. And so there are a host of things that we've done to improve this that I want to make sure people are aware of. First, if you go to nyc.gov/vaccine finder, that's the best way to access an appointment at a place that is convenient for you. And we've recently added appointment availability on that website so people can easily navigate to the places that actually have appointments available. Now, I recognize not everyone has access to the internet or is as proficient with a website. And so we've also set up a call center. It's 877-VAX4NYC. We have hundreds of agents who are there, able to speak to someone in their native language. And that's been critically important to reach particularly older New Yorkers who want to just pick up the phone and get some help rather than having to use a website. And then the final thing is we always rely again on the institutions that people already trust. So working with hospitals and health centers and other parts of the healthcare infrastructure who can reach out to their own patients and help them navigate to an appointment as well.
So I think we all know friends or family that have had COVID. Some are severely ill. One of my friends lost their sense of taste and smell and still don't have it back. And some didn't even know they had it. But you recently had COVID. What was that experience like for you?
Yes, I recently had COVID, and unfortunately, some of my family members were also diagnosed with COVID at the same time. For me, it was a fresh reminder of so many things that come along with the virus. Of course, concern for physical health, both for oneself as well as your loved ones, but also the uncertainty that comes along with it. You know, what's going to happen tomorrow? What's going to happen a few days from now, knowing the protean manifestations of the disease, you know, and how it can affect people very differently and very rapidly as well. I have to say the most difficult thing of it was concern for my loved ones. And it reminded me of how much people have been through over the last few months. Of course, the loss, the depth of suffering, the tragedy that too many families have borne. And so, you know, even though I feel very grateful that, you know, I had a mild course of illness, my family members have all also recovered, it was a chance to remind ourselves of the reverberating effects of the virus.
Did it change for you the way you speak about COVID now?
Well, it always helps, I suppose, to speak with more direct experience. And I do try to be more mindful about the fear and the uncertainty that characterizes one's experience with the virus. You know, because we're in our vaccination campaign, it also gives me a chance to emphasize that even for people who may have been infected in the past, who may have some degree of natural immunity, that it's very important for them to get vaccinated as well. And the most important reason is that we don't know how long immunity will last. And we do know that the vaccines help prevent severe illness, including among those who have been infected previously.
It's interesting you talk about the uncertainty that you personally felt once you got the virus. And I wonder, Dr. Choksi, if you could talk a little bit about what we've learned about the mental health effects of COVID collectively upon New Yorkers.
Yes, absolutely. This is such an important topic. It is an example of the cascading effects of the virus. You know, one of the things that I hope we'll take away from this pandemic and learn from is that, yes, that has confronted us in a way that is much more visible during COVID-19. But this is true far beyond this particular virus. That experience of illness, the arbitrariness of it, and the ways in which we have to not just think about physical health, but link it to mental health, link it to one's social circumstances. That is the conception of health that we should all have in mind. And I do think that we have a chance to finally take on some of the ways, you know, in which we should be doing better on these counts, particularly with respect to mental health issues, which I think of as a parallel pandemic related to COVID-19, because so many people, so many families have experienced trauma. And we have to have the way of talking about it, of acknowledging it, of saying, this is not just something that affects a limited number of people. this is something that is omnipresent and that we have to do better with respect to responding to. We have to have the systems in place to be more proactive about unpacking the effects of trauma and understanding that it's something we need to invest in and think about as fundamental to public health and healthcare as well. Again, this is an area where this administration, the de Blasio administration, and the city have really been leaders with respect to lifting up the commitment to addressing mental health. And I hope that this is yet another inflection point for us to say it is not enough for us to think about a vaccine or a medicine that addresses physical health, but to acknowledge that people are whole people. The mind is connected to the body, and the experiences that affect one's quality of life are equally, you know, related to mental health as they are physical health.
Almost a year to the date of the first case in New York City, President Biden announced that because of the Johnson & Johnson or J&J vaccine, he expects all adults to be vaccinated by May, which is really exciting. However, we've heard a lot of questions about its effectiveness. Should people get the J&J vaccine or should they wait for the Pfizer or Moderna?
Let me be unequivocal and clear. The best vaccine is the one that you can get soonest. Any of the three vaccines that have been authorized by the FDA, J&J vaccine, the Pfizer vaccine, the Moderna vaccine, each of them has been proven to be safe, effective, and life-saving. They've been studied in over 100,000 people across the large scientific studies that have been done around them. With respect to the effectiveness of the J&J vaccine, it's comparing apples and oranges to look just at the numbers that are being reported in the headlines because the studies on the different vaccines were done at different times and in different places. And particularly for the J&J vaccine, the studies were done at a time when the new variants of the virus were more prevalent, including in South Africa, where there is a variant of the virus that is likely to have affected the effectiveness of the vaccine. With all of that said, I just want to be as simple as possible with respect to what we know about the science, which is that each of these vaccines saves lives. It is safe for people. And if you can get it, it means that you have a layer of protection that is particularly useful to avoid severe illness.
So you just spoke about the fact that there are new variants. There was a new variant found in New York City recently. What is it that New Yorkers should know about that?
Variants are like a virus changing its fight plan in the middle rounds of a boxing match. And so the best defense against variants is to knock it out early. And we know what works to knock out this virus. We've discovered that over the last few months. It's the things that you've heard me talk about before: washing your hands, wearing your mask, keeping your distance, staying home if you're ill, getting tested, and now, very importantly, getting vaccinated. Those things will help to keep the variants at bay. We do have to continue watching them, whether it's the three variants of concern that we've already seen, the ones from the UK, South Africa, and Brazil. And we've also made sure that we're keeping an eye on emerging variants, like the one that was recently reported in parts of our city as well. Even as we follow the science on these things, we have methods that work. But I think the most important message is that people have to remain vigilant and recommit to those public health precautions because we're almost there. We need to hang on for just a little bit longer, get more people vaccinated, and I'm hopeful that we'll be able to turn the corner on this pandemic.
Dave, what would your advice be to your successor?
I would tell her or him that you are inheriting the finest health department in the entire world, number one. And number two, I would say that being in this role and really being in public service more generally is a little bit like being a running back in football. You've got to always keep your legs pumping, even when it feels like you may not be making progress in the moment. You've got to keep the legs pumping because all of a sudden there will be an opening, and that's what the people of New York City are relying upon you for, is to break through that opening and make progress on their behalf. So it takes a lot of energy. It takes a lot of commitment in order to do that. But it's also the most richly rewarding thing that I have ever experienced and maybe will ever experience as well.
So we are going to play a game inspired by one of my favorite childhood games from the 90s. Do you know what it is? No? This jingle may give you a hint. How do you support a COVID vaccination? A quick shot in the arm will help the vaccination. And a vaccination will help, it is true. And I've got Dr. Choksi here for you. Yes, it's our new game, Dr. Choksi's Vaccination. Okay, and for this game, we will give you two options and you have to pick one. So coffee or tea?
Coffee.
Impossible Burger or Beyond Meat Burger?
Well, I'm a vegetarian, so I endorse both. Impossible Burger.
Baton Rouge or New York City?
Ooh.
Do you want to plead the fifth on that one, Dave?
Yes. If I can check with counsel, I would love to plead the fifth.
We'll plead the fifth on that one on behalf of Dave. I'm going to instruct the client not to answer that question.
TV or reading?
Reading.
French fries or potato chips?
Fries.
Traverse Park or Prospect Park?
Traverse Park.
And that concludes the first and last game of Dr. Choksi's Vaccination.
I want to thank the Commissioner of Health and Mental Hygiene, Dr. Dave Choksi, for joining us today. Dave once described himself as a primary care doctor with a public health heart. Dave, on behalf of your colleagues and on behalf of 8.6 million New Yorkers, I want to thank you for your service and the inspiration and courage you give us every single day. New York City is incredibly lucky to be led at this time by someone of your extraordinary and rare talent. And we are grateful for the time you spent with us and grateful for your leadership during this incredibly difficult time.
Well, it's completely my privilege, and thanks for having me on.
I want to thank our guest today, Dr. Dave Choksi, for taking time to sit down with us. Dr. Choksi has been an invaluable asset to the city's COVID response efforts, and his leadership on a daily basis has been critical to our efforts to get all New Yorkers vaccinated. We hope you enjoyed this conversation and look forward to talking to you soon on another great episode of City Hall Pass.
This podcast is brought to you by the Office of the Counsel to the Mayor of New York City.